welcome to the One Mind Dogs From the Dog's Perspective podcast. I'm your host, Noora Keskiväri, and on this show, we explore personal dog journeys and uncover how we can become the best possible dog owners. From the dog's perspective, of course. I'm personally super passionate about understanding the dog's perspective and with that, helping others to have a happy and balanced life with their dogs. It is always very inspirational to hear it from others, their journey with their dogs and learning more about the dog's perspective. Today, our guest is Glenys Atkins from sunny Australia. Glenys is passionate about dog training and the One Mind Dogs method, and she aspires to stay in the dog sports long enough to fulfill her dog Chevy's potential. Glenys has even undergone hip replacement surgery to continue doing dog agility. We can't wait to hear more about your interesting journey. Welcome to the podcast, Glenys.
Thanks, Noora. It's great to be here.
So let's get started. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm a retired person who lives in New South Wales in sunny Australia, as Noora said. The area that I live in is quite remote. It's a regional area of New South Wales. And the dog sports that I like doing, which is agility and also some sensing with my sense work with my other dog, there's not a lot of stuff around here that you can actually get involved in. We've been doing agility for quite a while now, since 2016, I think it was, and we love it, absolutely love it. I'm in my 70s now, which is one of the things that's probably going to be a limiting factor in the end, but I didn't start till I was 67, so I don't think that age is necessarily a barrier.
Oh, wow, that's super interesting. And I think it's really inspiring for many of our listeners as well. So that's great. But we will talk about the age and hips a little bit later.
Okay.
So let's go a little bit back in time. Do you remember about your first experience with dogs? And did you already know back then that you will one day have your own dog?
Look, dogs have been a part of my life since I was a baby because my parents had a fox terrier, which was brought home from the breeder 2 days after I was born. So we were both about the same age. And my first experience, although I don't remember this, was that Bobby, the fox terrier, was given a bone to chew and I decided that I'd join him in chewing the bone. And so I think that was a really good one about the affinity that I felt I had with dogs because he didn't try and take it off me as far as I know. I just kept chewing it with him. So we were sharing the bone. But probably the one that's the most important one is that around 2000, I had a dog, a Border Collie Coolie Cross, who was deaf. And I was absolutely devastated. When the vet told me this dog is profoundly deaf, I was absolutely devastated because I thought, I can't do anything with this dog. How do I communicate with this dog? And as a result of that sort of looking at that dog and thinking, how am I going to work with it? I decided I'd become really determined to make sure that I could train and play and be with this dog the way I like being with dogs. And we together had a whole pile of body, hand, signals, movements that Skye learnt, and we could do things. I'd go take her for a walk down the beach and she'd be right down the beach off lead, and I would do a body movement hand thing and she would respond the way she'd been trained. And I think that was such a powerful message for me in terms of how dogs understand humans. So that was probably the first thing.
Oh, wow. Incredible. Well, you have really deep kind of learnings already since you were born with dogs. So that's absolutely fantastic. Yes.
Yeah, we've always had dogs in the family. Like my current two dogs are both miniature poodles, and I've had miniature poodles before. But I've had a variety of dogs. I've had dogs that are rescues. I've had dogs that are from sort of mixed breedings and, you know, accidents. And so I have had a lot of dogs over my life. and they were always part of me. I will never be without a dog.
Well, what's there then? What's inspiring you with dogs?
Well, obviously, humans are imperfect, but I don't think dogs are. I think that the unconditional acceptance that they have of us as humans is an amazing characteristic. It doesn't seem to matter whether I'm sad, happy, or cross, or whatever. My dogs accept who I am, and they just keep that relationship going with us all the time. I don't have to think about that very much at all. So it's an amazing thing for me. The other thing that comes up really quickly for me is the intelligence that they have, because once you start training dogs, you begin to realise how quickly they can pick up things that you're training. I do a lot of shaping with my dogs, and to me it's the most powerful training technique that you can ever have. When Coco, that was my first dog, that I've done trained in agility, she had an injury, and I went to a physiotherapist and we got programs to actually strengthen her. And since then I've done a course on it and a few other things as well. So I'm sort of moved away from that original one. But all of the stuff that I teach my two dogs now in conditioning is all shaping. And it's amazing to watch them. If I set up something that they're going to work on, they will come and experiment on that equipment until they find the thing that I want them to do. The intelligence is just amazing. And probably the third thing is just their willingness to try. Every single thing I ask of my dogs, they will have a go. And I think that's an amazing characteristic.
Well, that's pure wisdom. And I think, yeah, you are totally, I agree with you that as people, we should learn a lot about those aspects that you just mentioned. So that's, yes, pure wisdom, to put it. The One My Dogs method is all about the dog's point of view, and everything we teach is about seeing the world from the dog's perspective and having fun, so that also dogs are having fun. That's really important to us, to share that knowledge to people. And in this podcast, we want to share these real life stories about how learning more about the dog's perspective had impacted the life with dogs. Glenys, you have joined the One Mind Dogs community for some years ago. Tell us, how did you get started with One Mind Dogs?
Well, I got my first mini poodle, brown poodle, in 2015. And although I'd had previous poodles, this one was going to be something that was special because I was retired now and I could put more time into it. And we did puppy school and we did basic obedience and we did lots of stuff together all the time. And then I was just looking through poodles on the internet and I came across this dog called Orchidy. Now, Orchidy was a brown poodle, miniature but big, from Europe. And I watched this dog do things. It must have been an amazing dog. It was around about 2000. The dog was around sometime in like 2010, 2012. And it used to do a lot of different sorts of sports. It was also a show dog. And I watched it do an agility run. And that was it. I was hooked. I kept thinking, what an amazing sport. It was such a clever dog, so beautifully sort of balanced, and I don't know what sort of handling techniques the handler used, because I didn't know anything about it at that stage, but I just could not go past this sport. It was just wonderful. So I was hooked. So what I wanted to do then was to take Coco along that journey and we would learn agility. Now, I had a lot of conceptions which I now know are incorrect, but I needed a plan. And the first thing I had to do was to try and find a club or some way of training. Now, where I live is quite remote, so you don't have access to a whole lot of, you know, facilities and indoors, and there were not very many sort of clubs that were within easy driving distance of our house. We eventually found a club and we joined. And the girls in the club were lovely girls. They'd been doing agility with their dogs for years and years and years, and they tried to teach me what I needed to do. Unfortunately, I'm a little bit of an obsessive sort of person, and I like to know why things are working or why they're not working. And I couldn't get any real answers to that. I would do something and I'd say, well, why does that work and why doesn't that work? And the girls, although they had a lot of experience and could run their dogs beautifully, couldn't tell me what it was I needed to do or why I wasn't working properly. Now, at that time, I mean, I became a really pedestrian, I would call a pedestrian sort of handler. We got round courses, we did things, we had quite successes, and Coco actually got up to like master standard in jumping. But I wasn't happy with the way I was working with her, and I don't really think she was either. I thought she thought I was a bit of a dill. We, at that time, I went to one particular trial and I met these people, Georgia, who I think's already been interviewed on this program, and her husband, Dee Dee, and they used one-mind dog techniques. And I watched them run and I thought, that's exactly what I want to be able to do. I want that smooth connection. It was almost like the team had a synchronicity that meant that they would always know what the other one was going to do. About this time, towards the end of 2017, my hip got to a stage where it was so bad that I would have to have a replacement. And I kept thinking to myself, what am I going to do for 7 months when I can't run? And at that stage, I joined One Mind Dogs. And while I was recuperating, I went through all of the stuff on the website and I learned the techniques and I learned the methodology, and I attended some seminars with Nikki Drage, who has now become my coach, so that by the time my hip was, completely back to normal, so I could run, I knew what I wanted to do. I wanted to do One Mind Dogs. In 2020, I got Chevy, brought him home, and we started straight away with the One Mind Dog Foundations, and we've been working on that stuff ever since. I've had lots of trips out with Nikki. And if I compare Chevy with Coco, Coco got to a stage where I think she was totally frustrated with me because I wasn't doing stuff that she needed to know. But Chevy, he's got this amazing connection with me that we can do stuff, and it's like we're just one, one unit, and we can actually do the things that we are doing on a course together. It's just such an amazing feeling. Coco, I've since put Coco on. We're doing scenting with Coco now, and she's amazing at that. So she's got something else to do, and maybe we'll come back to agility later on. But at the moment, Chevy's the one that's sort of benefiting from my one dog, one mind dog's interaction, I think. So that's where we got to now.
Oh, wow. That was well described, how we call it, like two souls, one mind. So that was a perfect description for that.
It certainly is.
Well, once you started to learn more about One Mind Dog's method and from the dog's perspective, what is the biggest eye-opener for you?
Well, when I started back in the beginning, handling to me seemed to be the handler telling the dog what to do. Go there, do this, jump that, go up here, whatever. And it was like being in a circus to me. It was teaching the dog tricks that it had to do at your command. Once I got the three C's under control, I realized that what it's really about is what the dog understands as you're going doing a course. So when I think about it, I think about it from the point of view of where is the dog now in terms of its development and where do I want to take it next? And that's not just on a course, but that's also in things like shaping our conditioning work and scenting with Coco. Where do I want the dog to go next? But I take it from where the dog is at the moment, from their perspective. And that, to me, that's the big thing. It's not me telling the dog what to do. It's the dog coming along with me. So that's what I think of. That's what I think about what perspective is, the dog's perspective.
Oh my, this is like poetry. And the more people learn about this, what you just described, the better the world will be indeed for dogs. So that's like right. in the broad perspective. Well, if we think about your dog training journey so far, we always have some struggles and hurdles there. Could you describe some of them or one of them, and how did you kind of go through them?
Well, probably the main one for me at the moment, because I'm 73 now, and because I know I have arthritic problems, one of my big issues is maintaining fitness. If I go too hard at stuff, I go backwards. And if I don't go hard enough, I go to Nikki training and she says, run harder. And I can't run any harder. So that's the first one, probably. The way I've overcome that is to actually do more group fitness classes. And I've always done a little bit of running all the time. I do daily stretching and strength work just to keep that going. And I'm trying to learn as much distance handling as possible so that it doesn't become too much of an issue. The second one would probably be the distance that I am from Nikki, who is my coach here in Australia. She lives 860 kilometres away from me, and that for us is a couple of days of driving. Now, I have absolutely no problem in going to Orange because it's the most beautiful place in inland Australia, lovely wine region, and the people are lovely. So we go up there. I think we've had about four trips so far this year, and I'm going up again in about 2 weeks. I spend a week with Nikki and we do a couple of training sessions together, and then I take stuff away and do that on my own later on. I know that she does do analysis of any videos and things that I send to her, so that's really helpful, but doesn't replace the one-on-one. And she just always makes everything such fun that I like being there. I like doing it with her. And Chevy really enjoys it too. Chevy and Coco love Nikki. They're just about to bowl her over whenever we get out of the car. Those are the two things, really. My fitness, maintaining my fitness, and maintaining my face-to-face training with somebody who's always doing one-mind dogs.
Yeah, the distances in Australia, they always surprise us.
I know.
Where
would 860 kilometres take you?
To the other side of the country here in Finland.
Yes.
Almost. Well, if we'll think about the other perspective, not the struggle one, what could you mention are the top highlights of your life with your dogs?
Yeah, okay. Well, first of all, I've got a really supportive family who, as soon as I decided I was going to do agility, have just all jumped on and said, yeah, Mum, that's great. And my husband too, really supportive. He drives with me and comes and travels and so on. So without that support, I probably wouldn't be doing agility. So that's the first thing. I don't think there's anything better than going to a one-mind dog seminar. I just have so much fun. There's the learning that you get by being coached one-on-one and being encouraged by other people and watching other people do the actual activities is wonderful. And I have such a ball. So I go to as many seminars as I can. Probably then it would be nailing a new technique. So when I finally get to a stage where I've done the online sort of learning and I've worked out physically what it is I have to do, the actual doing it with my dog and working with my dog and it working, that's the thing that's just such an amazing feeling. You just don't realise how much that connection with the dog is a magic one when a new technique actually works. Another one, perhaps one of the ones that I'm currently struggling with, and I have struggled all the time, is remembering course. So when I actually do remember a course, I get a real buzz, because that's been something that's quite hard. The lower grade courses are not so bad, but once you start, Coco was doing master's courses, and remembering those for me was a real difficult task. And I don't think you ever forget your first clear run at a trial. I can still remember Chevy's and, sorry, Coco's, because that was in 2016 or something. But I Chevy's just started trialing, and I really remember his first run really clearly. I can think exactly what we did in each little bit, and that's a real buzz as well. So they're the highlights probably.
I would love to listen to you for hours just for information. So be aware, I might call you again. If we think about the magical connection you just mentioned, and we both know that sharing that knowledge is something super important for other dog owners as well, and like to experience that, because that's something exceptional. And it's not that far away if you think about general puppy owner or new puppy owner, you can get that also with puppies. So what would you tell someone having their very first dog, let's say your neighbor or your relative or family member? What are your tips for them?
I think that the basic one for me is to invite the dog into your life, and that's in all respects. I don't think I've ever had a dog that lived on the back veranda. Our dogs have always lived in the house. And that to me is where you get that beautiful connection in terms of their relationship with you. So invite them into your life, and my dogs share our bed. So we have a very close relationship. When you get the puppy home, I think that the most important thing is to start shaping the behaviour you want right away, so that the behaviour fits in with your family. You need to learn how to shape, and you need to shape that behaviour all the time in a positive way with the dog. You need to stimulate the dog, play, train, take it places, do things with it, and that will then make its brain really active and receptive to the things that you're doing. You need to condition their bodies if they're going to do any sports. But even if you're not going to do any sports, I really think that conditioning is an important aspect. Now, some people do conditioning just by making sure the dog gets lots of physical experiences. If you can't do that, then you need to work out other ways of doing that. And I do conditioning with my dogs. And if you're doing agility, I'd be saying, join One Mind Dogs, because that's where you'll get the best instruction as far as, and find a coach, best instruction you can have in terms of becoming an agility person.
Oh, wow. Yeah, and also I have to mention here for the listeners that we also have this amazing puppy training app. So that's also that doesn't have anything to do with agility. So that's a perfect start for anyone who is taking their first dog. And then, but it's also great for new agility dog or dog sport dogs. So it gives all the basics. And I will also share links together here in the description. So Glenys, you can share me all the inspirational links that you would like to give out to new dog owners about the things that you just mentioned. So if anyone is interesting, and I'm interested, and I think many are. You mentioned, Glenys, that you did have this hip replacement, and you mentioned how that process got started. I think that was just incredible. I already shared it with my husband yesterday, and I was so I think it would be so lovely to share it also to our listeners, like about the doctor and how the doctor reacted and all that. So please share that.
Yes. Well, I had in 2017, or before that, obviously, my hip started to deteriorate, and I had x-rays, so I knew it was going, and I knew that I'd have to have something done about it. But it didn't stop me from doing stuff. So I was able to run. I was able to walk around. I couldn't go up hills or down hills, and I couldn't go upstairs, and I couldn't sleep. So the pain was bad enough at night that I couldn't, you know, relax and go to sleep. So I decided that I'd have this done at Christmas, just before Christmas, so that I'd have the maximum sort of time when we weren't doing any agility that I could recover in. So I had the operation done then. But when I was speaking to the surgeon about having it done before, you know, and scheduling it, I said to him, he said, look, a lot of the time you have to make a decision about your lifestyle. because some people will put up with the pain and some people will say, well, I don't care if I can't do this anymore. And I said, well, I want my hip replaced so I can do dog agility. And he said, that is absolutely fabulous. He was just absolutely blown away. So after the operation, I actually sent him I was back running, doing my stuff. I sent him a video of Coco and I doing just a little course during training, and it was great. It was fabulous. And I don't think, in the end, if you can get good medical care and you can have confidence in your surgeon and you do all your physiotherapy, you can go through a hip replacement and still do agility. And no doubt that's the same for many other things as well. It's a very interesting little story, that one.
Interesting, and the most, I think it's very inspirational for many people. So that if there's a will, there's a way, like they say. So if you just stay committed to keeping up with the physiotherapy, as you mentioned, and do that basic work, so I think that's important there. That's so incredible. Oh my God. And I think we all want to see a video of you running.
Oh, so
you have to share me. Yeah, absolutely. So you have to share us some links.
Well, I'll share one of the ones with Chevy, just the recent ones we've done where he did his first trial. I'll send some from his first trial. They were only obviously very basic courses, but he did a very nice job and I was very happy with him.
Oh, that's great, but we most importantly want to see your running.
Oh, right. I can run.
No, just joking. Yeah. Well, anyway, that would be great to add in the description of this episode. Well, let's go to a big question that I always want to ask from the guests. So, the world with dogs or of dogs is growing and a lot. So there are all the time more and more pet dogs in the world, especially in the Western countries. If there is one thing that you could change in the world to make dogs' lives better, what would that be?
I think if every owner was, well, you can't say mandated because you can't make people do things, but if every owner could understand what a dog, all the things about a dog from what a dog feels like, I think that would really help them understand what they need to do to be the best sort of owner for that dog. I sometimes joke that dog owners should be licensed and, you know, you should be able to demonstrate that you understand what the behaviour is if you've got a dog on a lead or not got a dog on a lead, or you've got a dog that's a bit reactive. You know, you those sorts of things most people don't know. And I think if dogs' lives are going to be as good as they can be, people are the ones that need to adjust the way they look at the dog. It's not the dog's fault. It's their fault.
Indeed. Well said. I totally agree, 100%. Well, now we are coming to the end of this episode. Is there anything I didn't ask you and you would like to share with us?
There's a couple of things that really were a highlight for me when I started doing One Mind Dogs. The first seminar I ever went to, I was thrown into the advanced class and all I knew were things that I'd studied online. I'd done a little bit of, you know, basic handling, but I hadn't done very much at all. And I was accepted into one of Nikki's seminars, but I had to go in the advanced group. Nikki was wonderful. She always adjusts to what you need. But at the end of this, they did a running of the course without arms and verbals. I was terrified because I thought, how can I get Coco to go in a tunnel without saying tunnel? Or how can I get Coco to go around the jump without flinging my arm out to the side so that she understands that's what I want? She did it. I couldn't believe it. It was such an eye-opener, that the connection that you can get with your dog just through watching it and being visually connected to it and then using your body in a way that communicates the things that you want was totally foreign at that stage of my development. And it was one of those things that really made me understand what One Mind Dogs was about. That and also that I knew what deaf dogs could do, which was another part of that sort of story. So that was one of the ones that was really quite an eye-opener for me. The other thing I would say is that in Australia we've got a fairly aged demographic doing agility. And I think there's a number of reasons why that occurs, because in Australia, the way in which it's set up, you really can only do it out of work time or train out of work time, and trials are out of work time, and those sorts of conditions mean that people don't often, and people have families and get involved with things. So they can't always get to a stage where they can do agility. But being retired, so in Australia people retire somewhere around about the age of 65 or so, it's not a barrier. That age is not a barrier to starting. I think that that's a really important point. There are three things that happen in agility which to me are central to aging well. One is the physical activity. And in agility, you don't have to run all the time. You can work a distance. You can make sure that the dog that you select is not one that's a mad border collie in the sense that it runs all the time, but that it's a dog that's maybe thinks a little bit more sensitively about how it goes around a course and you can still interact with it. So that physical activity, you can cater for all sorts of ability levels. The mental stimulation is really important, because as you age, unless you are constantly learning new things and using that your brain to actually do things, you begin to decline. So that's another part of agility which really I think agility really caters to for older people. And the really significant thing is the emotional and social sort of connection that you can develop by being an agility person. I have met so many wonderful people through One Mind Dogs, like-minded people, and I've met just as many beautiful dogs in One Mind Dogs. So I think that when we had COVID, when COVID was around and everything over here basically stopped, those things became so pronounced to me. When I didn't have that physical activity, that mental stimulation and the social connection that I have through agility, I probably, my own mental health was also in jeopardy. So I think that it's not a sport just for young people, although I love watching young people play agility. It's beautiful. But it's also a sport that older people can do as well. And I think that's something that we should all take away from it.
Oh, wow. It's not often that I get like wordless or speechless. So this is the moment. Glennis, thank you so, so, so much for being our guest today and sharing these incredible stories and these piece of wisdom. And yeah, thank you so much. I'm 100% sure that our listeners feel the same and are super inspired to maybe change something they are thinking or doing, or maybe getting started with something, because it's never too late.
Oh, well, thank you, Neera. That was very nice to be able to share the ideas that I sort of have developed over the last 5 or 6 years. It's been a beautiful journey for me and for the two dogs.
To all our listeners, thank you for tuning in to the One Mind Dogs From the Dog's Perspective podcast. We hope you have gained inspiration for your own life with dogs and your learning more about the dog's perspective. Remember to follow One Mind Dogs on social media and sign up for the podcast newsletter, of course, to stay updated on the latest episodes and exciting content. We would love to also hear from you and your dog, so tag One Mind Dogs and share your special moments with your dogs. See you in the next episode.